Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Thursday, December 27th, 2018. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins, as always. And sad news to start the show today. Yesterday, Siggy Schmidt passed away. Age of 65, the former LA coach and coach of the Seattle Sounders and Columbus Crew in Major League Soccer is no more. And Dwayne, it's a sad news, and that leaves the void of soccer coach. It leaves a big void. Siggy Schmidt was a big name, big presence in Major League Soccer, all different, either on TV or on the sideline, so it leaves it's a sad news to start the show with.
No, for sure, and we all knew he was sick. I always get a little bit leery when they're not releasing specific information about the state of someone. That tends to mean that they're nearing the end, and I kind of got that gathered. What came out yesterday is that he was awaiting a heart transplant. Unfortunately, it did not come in time. You know, Siggy Schmidt had some health problems in his last few years. That's unfortunate, but you can't take away from the legacy that he had in this league. And he's one of the first. He's a guy that was around from 1.0, right? He's an OG in MLS, so to speak, and a guy that was just part of the, you know, part of the wallpaper, part of the furniture, whatever, in the room there of MLS. And for him to go at 65, which is not young but not old either. Really, I think in today's age, you would hope to live to in your 80s. So it is younger than you would expect or hope. For him to go now as one of the first people from that early age of MLS to pass. And I think you're really seeing a lot of people. The amount of tweets about Siggy Schmidt today, he's trending in the United States, across the United States overall, if you give any credence to trending stats, but that says something about the amount of people that are talking about him anyway on Twitter. And certainly if you go to my feed, I've retweeted a lot of the biggest names in MLS, and they're all saying what their personal experience with him was, and it's all very positive, and they all talk about how good of a person he was, how much time he had for the media. And certainly I only dealt with him on two occasions, and you know, just in a scrum type situation, so I don't pretend to have that great of insight into that, but he was very patient, more than a lot of bigger names in MLS. You know, other LA coaches, if you want to rewind the lines, they are much less patient.
We're not going to name. Name the name you're talking about, but we all know you're talking about.
Precisely. So you know that's, and I always take. I think that's always it says something about the character, how they deal with people that they don't necessarily want to deal with as part of their jobs, how patient they are with people that ask them questions that they may feel are beneath them. You know, that to me says something about someone's character, and say what you want about his coaching. And a lot of people did during the last few years suggest that perhaps Siggy was getting passed by the game, by the modern MLS, but his character never wavered. And I think that's, on a day like this, the most important thing to look at.
He managed the UCLA Bruins from 1980 to 1999 with a stint with the United States U-20, then 5 years with the LA Galaxy from 1999 to 2004, 1 year with the United States U-20 once again before taking over the Columbus Crew in 2006 all the way to 2008. Then when the Seattle Sounders, arrived in Major League Soccer 2009. Seattle Sounders head coach from 2009 to 2016. So his long stint with the Sounders will be what most people remember. And let's not forget the last 2 years, year and a half, with the LA Galaxy taking over for Bruce Arena, while Kurt Anolfo, who took over for Bruce Arena. So a lot of experience coaching in Major League Soccer, the winningest coach in Major League Soccer, Siggy Schmidt. And for him, leaving, you were mentioning, the game was passing him by, but a player's coach, someone that majority of the people who were under him, or as a player, or under him as a coach, really learned. And if you look at the coaching staff around the league, from assistant to head coach positions now, a lot of it stems from Siggy Schmidt, giving his knowledge to his assistant, helping other coaches to grow. And that will be one of his legacy as well, is the coaching tree, you could say, that he planted 2 decades ago.
And somewhat fitting, L.A. names a former player, Siggy Schmidt, as their head coach just days before he passes. Says something about the legacy of the man and how he passed on. GBS, of course, a star under that Columbus Crew player. You mentioned most people will think of him as a Seattle Sounder, and I think that's probably a fair assessment. But I will always see him with that black and gold scarf around his neck for that Crew 2008 team, which remains to me, you know, in context of the time, one of the best MLS teams I've ever seen. And they were a huge rival to Toronto, huge frustration to Toronto in the Civil War. They weren't a huge rival. You know, they didn't think Toronto was a huge rival because they were like a mosquito on their lapel. But to TFC fans, that Columbus team was one that they didn't like very much. But I think that a lot of people, particularly many years later, can respect a great deal. And I think I think that he did his greatest job, maybe that was the peak of his time in those latest years in Columbus, first years in Seattle, when he was really maybe the best coach in MLS, maybe the guy that was able to manipulate that early 2.0 era in a way where you could have won the star and had to manipulate all those personalities. You mentioned him being a player's coach, and that might have been the key to that, because back then, this is the Beckham experiment era of Major League Soccer. And that's when you had this huge disparity. You have guys making millions versus guys making $12,000 in your dressing room. And to be able to manage that environment, to be able to manage people in that environment, would have been something that I think he excelled at. And it really came to fruition in the most part in the early Seattle days, when he took that expansion team and made them MLS contenders immediately, won U.S. Open Cups right away, as we all know, and ultimately won one of his two MLS Cups, and probably the one, to me, as I said, that is the most impressive, the 2008 MLS Cup for the smallest market in the league, in the Columbus Crew. And, we all know the story that the Columbus has gone through, and that's another fitting thing right there, that he passes immediately after we know that the Crew are stabilized for a long period of time, one of his former clubs.
So our condolences to all his family and to everyone who feels the need to remember and think about Siggy Schmidt's legacy today. A coach that will be missed, a coach that, what you mentioned off top, was very generous with the media, very generous with his knowledge for his players, for his assistant coaches, and someone who was not afraid to help raise the level of soccer in North America when it was desperately needed, with his knowledge from abroad and from the time in the university ranks here in North America. He amassed a big, big amount of knowledge that he was able to pass on to other players that became coaches, pass on to assistant coaches that became manager. And this is all we can ever ask for. So we thank you, Siggy, for all that you have done for North American soccer for American soccer for sure, and North American soccer as a whole over the last 2 decades. Now, it's not easy to move away from this type of subject, but we will. Frank De Bauer is now the new manager in Atlanta, taking over for Tata Martino. What best way to replace a known manager than getting another known manager who coached in Serie A, coached in the Premier League? Okay, it wasn't a super success with Crystal Palace, but whatever. It wasn't a super success with Inter in Italy as well. But the man behind Ajax, Ajax 2010-2015, he was the assistant manager with the Netherlands team when they were great.
2010.
Yeah, exactly, in 2010 in South Africa. And he was a youth coach as well. That's where he got his beginnings as a coach with Ajax as well. So Atlanta United getting another big name, Frank De Bauer, as their manager.
Yeah, certainly, there's going to be a lot of hot takes on this one right away, because it's hot takeable. It really is. And we're going to make some genuine, like, sweeping generalizations in terms of how to evaluate him and what he might be able to do in Atlanta. And I think that's really the only way to evaluate it right now, because we simply don't know. Certainly what we're going to draw upon a little bit is a couple things. There's a couple key factors here. I think the first one, and you talked about this off the top, is what it says about Atlanta and what it says about Atlanta's ambition and willing to spend money. Frank De Boer would not have been cheap. So certainly this is indicating that even though they've won a championship, they are certainly going to continue to spend money. And if Alarón goes on, if they lose Martinez down the line, if they lose Lee Stars, that they're going to do what they can to replace them. And that says something about what this club is going to be like moving forward. And that's an important consideration, important thing to state. The second thing that we're going to talk about, though, is whether or not he and his style and what we anticipate he's going to try and do with Atlanta is possible in Major League Soccer. And this is where I have to be careful not to be too influenced by my previous experience with the Ajax experiment in MLS 1.0, which, of course, is Aaron Winter, because that was a team that did not have the same level of competence that Atlanta had at the time in TFC. And Aaron Winter came in and brought the wrong type of player in, and the style that he tried to impose, the 4-3-3, very rigid in his tactics, very very specific things he wanted to do. He wanted a uniform philosophy tactic across the entire, you know, organization, and they
which
did have
sense.
This was the era of the academies.
I was going to say, which makes sense today, but back then it was a different way to implement it, too, without the USL 2 teams, without the academy fully formed like it is now. It was a bit of vision that was actually difficult to achieve. Now you can come to Atlanta with Frank De Bauer and having maybe the idea of the second coming of total football, but it would be more achievable just because of the sheer success they already have and because of the ambition, which equals money in Major League Soccer, that they can spend in a way to adapt the team to the mentality and tactics that Frank De Bauer brings with him.
Yeah, and it should be noted that there are people in Toronto still that believe very strongly that if Winter was just allowed to be to have the worst team in MLS history in that second year, basically if the TFC just let him play that out and continue to develop that system, that they felt what they were seeing at the youth level. And you know, this is MAK came out of the early time of that. He would have started in the academy at that period. So that's just one example of a player that started in that era of academy and ended up being, you know, Mark Anthony Kay. We've seen what he did this year for the LFC. Now, that could be an outlier. We don't know. And he obviously had other influences after that. But there are a lot of people that do believe that the project was just not allowed to go to its end point, right? I don't necessarily think that. And I do think that it's not fair to necessarily compare Aaron Winter to Frank De Boer in terms of his overall competence as a manager, because he was much less experienced. It was his first job at that time. So it's not a direct comparison, but what is more comparable is sort of what we can look in Frank De Boer's sort of history as a manager is the inflexibility on tactics and this desire to be possession over pragmatism, I'll call it. That you want to play from the back, you want to play in a certain way, and you're not willing to sort of adjust that. Patrick Vieira was guilty, and this is in Matt Doyle's column that he wrote today about this. He will point this out as well, that NYCFC was very inflexible in terms of the tactics, and we saw both, you know, the Toronto series where they had their gates blown out in that series. TFC destroyed them in 2016. And they didn't adjust the tactics in the playoffs to the styles that Toronto was putting there. And obviously the New York Red Bulls rivalry, which has been dominated by the Red Bulls, who play a very direct, very high-pressing kind of style. And sort of they take away from that rhythm that NYCFC was trying to create. So this is the fear that I think people that think that De Boer might struggle in MLS is he won't be tactically flexible enough. And we won't simply know whether this is the case or not until it happens. But it is certainly something for Atlanta fans to worry about. And what I will say about this is that, you know, if we were on this show and we've been doing this, coming on to our fifth season coming up, I've been doing it before that for 3 years, so a long time. If we're going way back in the early days of this show or the late days of the last show, we would have talked about how foreign managers struggle in MLS. That's no longer the case. And I always felt that it was a bit overstated anyway. I think any manager, whether American or North American or European, needs to be evaluated in what they do when they come here. And if I think that what is troubling is that inflexibility that we've seen at Crystal Palace, whether or not that comes to MLS, I don't know. And if it does, then it could be a problem. But we have to wait and see, Kevin.
It's funny, too, because once Vieira started to adjust his inflexibility, basically started being flexible on tactics and on player choices, and on position on the field, especially in Yankee Stadium, you did see an improvement from that team, from how Vieira was viewed as a coach. If you go back to the beginning of Patrick Vieira with NYCFC, the jury was still out for a while before it was considered a success for him at NYCFC once he adjusted to the league. And Frank De Bauer, if he comes here with, yes, his mentality, his ideas, and his tactics in his head, but with an amount of humility that he will need to adjust himself to Atlanta's structure and adjust himself to Major League Soccer's type of team that needs to happen for success, because it might be two different things. Frank De Bauer might think about one way to achieve success in Major League Soccer, and the actual way to do so might be two different, but if he adapts, he might be able to find that way to achieve success in Major League Soccer. So basically, we're just saying it could be a great signing, it could be a bad signing. It all depends on his level of commitment and his willingness to adjust to a league and not just having the team adjust to him.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, it could be a good signing, it could be a bad signing. Like any signing, really. But what Atlanta's season for next year is going to be determined on a couple factors that I think are only slightly related to who manages them. And well, one of them is how they handle the Champions League for the first time, because we saw how much it derailed TFC last year, although it didn't derail NYRB, so it can be managed. So how well he does that, and that's just something that you would expect that a European manager would be good at. They would know how to rotate a squad. They would know how to keep a squad playing in double competitions. It's something that's not necessarily as common sense, as instinctive to a North American manager who are used to playing, you know, they play maybe multiple competitions, but they're not as interspersed in the season as a Champions League match schedule is, right? So maybe he'll be better at that. So that's going to be a key component to Atlanta's season. But the other key component is going to obviously be what they do with their star players, whether they sell them, whether they retain them, if they do sell them, how they replace them. And that, you know, is what's going to come down to his contacts. And ultimately, to go back to Aaron Winter, which is the other Dutch manager that we can look at in this case, one of his biggest failings was not understanding the level of player needed for Major League Soccer. He brought in guys that were below the level required, really. I don't think Atlanta's going to suffer the same way, because they have an established scouting staff there now that they can draw upon. They have an established academy now that they can draw upon. So it's just a different era.
Yeah,
and I don't think you can draw that comparison that much.
And Atlanta this year was doubled the size of their scouting department, too. They added more video coaching. They added more video scouting and scouting across North America and actually South America, too. So with the size of the scouting department of Atlanta, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Frank De Bauer has really helped in his decisions on who to bring and the level of it. And when you have a team like Atlanta and you commit and you re-sign Michael Parker, even though there was a ton of rumors sending him to Toronto or another team, and they're able to ink a new contract, you know that Atlanta's coming in next year to not only be competitive in the Champions League, but also to defend their main MLS Cup title that they have won a few weeks ago. Now, before we move on to talk about City's woes, two terrible weeks for City, before we talk about this, the Ottawa Fury will be in the USL Championship in 2019. CONCACAF has sanctioned Ottawa and have asked Ottawa to just pull their case from the Court of Arbitration of Sport before it gets a resolution by sanctioning the Ottawa Fury for the 2019 season, at least, in the USA's USL Division One, or known as the Championship.
Yeah, and look, I think that this was the plan all along, was to sort of slap them on the wrist and hope that they understand that this is not going to be an unlimited sort of extension of this sanctioning. And I'm not sure this is becoming a he said, he said, he said, she said, he, she said, she said, whatever combination of that you want to put in there for a while now. We don't know exactly what's going on in terms of who is lying to who, or who doesn't know what, or who's not informing who of anything. It's a bit of a mess that way. You know, my bias is that I feel that the Fury are manipulating things in terms of trying to make their fans think that they're the victim. That is my bias. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll admit that. That's possible, but that's my bias. It's possible also that CONCACAF wasn't, you know, forthright in terms of what was going on. That is the bias of Ottawa fans. Truth, maybe in between, as you all say. But what we do know is this, is that they will be in the USL next year. And I think most of us agree that regardless of where we stand on the Ottawa Fury v. CONCACAF v. the Canadian Premier League v. the CSA battle, we want them to continue to play. And that's the bottom line. And they will continue to play for next year. They will be in the USL next year. But I do think, Kevin, and most people I think agree with me, is that the implied message to this was, you've got to find a way to work with Canadian Premier League moving forward after 2019. And we'll see. I think if they don't put a plan in place for next year, that they're going to be back in the same position again, particularly if the Canadian Premier League launches with any level of success that we all hope it does. So, you know, it's a year reprise. Certainly it's going to be interesting. What one person said, and I think there is some truth in this, is that the Canadian Premier League right now is just like a big bowl of hugs, right? Like everyone loves everyone and everyone's wonderful and there's no one, you know, everyone wants everyone to be successful. So at least now, if the Fury come in 2020, you're instantly going to have a villain in the league. This club that didn't want to be them and was dismissing their importance and causing problems off the start, they come into that league, every team's fan base is going to want to show it to them. They're going to want to put it to them. And that's the same thing whenever we find out what the Voyageurs Cup format is next year. Whoever draws the Fury, and I don't know what the format will be, but there's a good chance that maybe I think there's probably a better than average chance that the Fury will end up playing a Canadian Premier League team in that. That's going to be a hotly contested and hotly watched and very interesting matchup. And that's a little bit of spice that I think we needed.
Sure. Hey, it's Christmas. We always need some spice. So
exactly. Yeah.
That it is. When I agree with you in the aspect of we're happy they'll be playing. That's what we wanted, and that's what we were afraid of. Is the result of all this would have been the disappearance, at least for a year or two, or just the disappearance of Ottawa soccer, and we don't want that. It's the last thing we do want. And good news for every soccer fan in the region of Ottawa, the Ottawa Fury will play in 2019, and you'll play against familiar teams because you're in the same league as you were over the last two seasons. So, nothing to worry about for this year. We'll see in 12 months' time if the same issues appear.
And the hope is that the Canadian Premier League launches and there's 5,000-6,000 people at the stands and there's great rivalries involved and the competition's compelling and the Ottawa fans that are on the fence right now are looking at the Canadian Premier League and going, why are we playing Penn FC? This is ridiculous. We should be in this league that has actual passion around it. Whereas, you know, not that I love the USL. I do. I think it's a really important league and we followed it closely. Hell, we had a show that was dedicated to it for a while, right? So it's not that I dislike the USL. I just feel that the Canadian team should be working toward being in that league right now. And I understand how, from an outside perspective, it can seem like a double standard that the three MLS teams are there, but we have to be looking at what's best for Canadian soccer at this point. And I think that it's pretty clear that what's best for Canadian soccer is to have the Canadian Premier League and the three MLS teams separate from that, because they simply are the three teams that can afford a budget that plays within Major League Soccer. And hopefully, and I'll say this outright, and I don't think people fully understand this about this, I would love to see the three MLS teams eventually in the Canadian Premier League. I just think we're a decade away, that's all.
Well, and I still believe that they might never, and that's fine with me too. It's the famous grandfathering rule or argument. They could always stay in Major League Soccer, and that would be fine to me too. And just because the size of the league, the fact that they were there before, there was an infrastructure like the Canadian Premier League, and I don't want to force anyone to go into a place where they're not necessarily feel they're at the same level. And if it has to stay this way forever, I'm all for it. It's okay for the Impact TFC Vancouver to stay in Major League Soccer because they were there before we had our own league. Who knows? Maybe eventually you have a sister team of those ones or just another team in the same market in the Canadian Premier League. We'll see. And there's a lot of things that can happen in a lot of years, but I do see the same potential as there is in Wales, example, where Cardiff and Swansea are still, because of the 1905 rule, where they were already in the league system in 1905 when Wales got their league. So it's a long time ago, you're going to say yes, but there's some precedent for this. So we'll see.
I think there's still a chance that we'll see another league evolve, which is above MLS and the game actually too. And
yeah,
one or all three of the Canadian teams might be interested in joining that. So you know, the things are going to change is what I'm saying. The things are going to evolve, and we'll just sit and watch. I think that 2026 World Cup, that's a lot of people are – the rumor around the Super League is all tied into the Mexican, U.S., and Canadian federations wanting to do something that shows their cooperation on an even greater level in the lead-up to 2026. And there have been rumblings that are more than just whispers at this point about – the creation of some kind of competition that involves the three countries, whether that's a league or whether that's some kind of amped up
a cup
short-term league. Yeah, I don't know, but I could certainly see TFC being interested in being involved in that because of the resources of MLSE. I don't know about the other two teams, but certainly these things are going to, you know, who knows what's going to happen in 10 years is what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. So it's something to keep an eye on. And we'll see all the ramifications from all the sides with Ottawa. But, you know, Ottawa's going to play in 2019, and that's a positive news. Another news that happened a few days ago, Laurent Simon and Dijon of Ligue 1 agreed to mutually part ways and have broken the contract. Laurent Simon is now a free agent, and Laurent Simon has apparently signed a two-year deal with Major League Soccer. So, who is he going to? What city is he going to? He has to go through the allocation process. Right now, Cincinnati's number one, but there's a famous team who's really high up there, and there's been a lot of rumors that Laurent Simon could come back to Canada, but not with the Impact. Maybe Laurent Simon will become a Toronto FC player.
I think there's no maybe about this. Chris Mavinga pretty much tweeted it out without tweeting it out when all the rumors were swirling around. He tweeted something very shy saying, oh, you're welcome. You know, there's an understanding that because they're two French guys in MLS that they probably have a relationship. So there's that.
Well, Laurent Simon, to be fair, he's not French. He's from Belgium. But
sure, he speaks
he's Francophone.
Yeah, that's what I meant by that. Yeah, French-speaking, I should have said. Yeah, not France, French speaking. But look, there is a lot of reasons. There's a lot of good reasons, good family reasons that we suspect that Simon will be back in this area. And perhaps his family will be in Montreal. He plays in Toronto. That is just a short little flight away, 45 minutes on Porter Airlines to get there for the weekend. So that will be something that will be good for them and good for the family. So it makes a lot of sense. And I think most Impact fans will understand that and will forgive him for going to the rival because of the family reasons. He never wanted to leave Montreal. It wasn't a case of a player that said, oh, screw you, Impact, and went to L.A. This was a guy that went kicking and screaming, and now he's doing the best for his family to come back. And I think, you could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think most Impact fans will understand that.
Yes and no, though. The fact that he always wanted to say Montreal, that narrative has been really successful on his part, but it takes two to tango. And the trade did not come out of nowhere with the demands that he wanted, too. So there's two stories that you can find the truth maybe in the middle somewhere. But it's not just on the Impact with the trade with Laurent Simon. That's what I was told by multiple sources when it happened and over the last few months. And we'll never really know the content of the discussions that Laurent Simon did have with Joey Saputo and the front office of the Montreal Impact that led to the trade to go to LAFC, but strictly on the pitch. Difficult 2018 for Laurent Simon. He did have some great highs with LA, but it has some pretty high lows as well with LAFC, enough that he was sold during the season to Dijon, and then in Dijon did not go the way that he wanted to. Difficulty to find success in Ligue 1, enough so that both parties wanted to move on. So we'll see when he comes back to Major League Soccer, the level, if he can still hang with the highest possible outcome here in Major League Soccer. But let's just put it this way. 2018 in Major League Soccer and in Ligue 1 did not turn out the way Laurent Simon planned.
Yeah, I mean, this is an eyeball versus stat argument, too. When this first happened, and a lot of Montreal fans, a lot of, he sucked, they were saying, and, I don't think he sucked. I looked at some of the underlying numbers, and he was a top third defender in the league still. He wasn't at the very top, so certainly he had slipped down. And I don't know. You're right. Obviously, he's older than when he was Defender of the Year. That's going to play a role. He's not going to perform at that level, but I don't think he's going to be expected to play at that level for Toronto. He'll be expected to support Chris Mavinga, who is PFC's prime, you know, number one defender. And I think that they look at Simon, they look at more together, two older guys that they should be able to piece together a full season for them as the secondary sort of support defender, center defender in that setup. The thing with Simon's 2018 numbers, you know, regardless of how he left Montreal, there was no doubt a turmoil in his life from leaving Montreal, and that would impact his play. Forgive the pun. That would affect his play on the field. So we'll wait and see on it. It's certainly, I think, a risk on TFC's part, a financial risk. But what it does indicate to me from TFC is that if there are any questions about TFC going all in on 2019, thinking they still can win a championship, this is answered. They're not signing, how old is he, 33? They're not signing a guy in their 30s if they don't think that they can win a championship next year, compete in the CCL again. If they really felt that they were going to change things over and start fresh, they would have started already. They would have, you know, thrown out the kids. They would have probably kept that sixth pick overall. And the suggestion is that the number six super draft pick is going to go to Cincinnati to ensure that they are able to select him in the allocation order. So Cincinnati will get the sixth pick and flip allocation spots. So they're basically getting a free pick, which is good for them. So that's the understanding of the expectation here. So if they were going to rebuild, they would have started with that. But adds a little spice to the two Salties derby next year, at any rate. But we'll wait and see that, and it's going to be interesting. As I said before, I think 2019 is shaping up to be a really interesting season in Major League Soccer. There's less kind of certainties than I've seen in a while.
And the way it's going, I think Montreal is doing a lot of good moves in the offseason. I think Toronto is going to continue to be a strong team, and 2018 was just a blip on the radar. And, we got Mark Dos Santos in Vancouver. Vancouver is going to have a lot of money to spend over the next couple of weeks. So, for all Canadian teams in Major League Soccer, it's actually really interesting. 2019 and expansion and FC Cincinnati coming into the league. And, it's going to be a fascinating time for Major League Soccer in 2019. Let's finish this show today by talking about Boxing Day a bit. Yesterday, a lot of great team games in the Premier League, Liverpool getting the great result. And with that Liverpool result and with the Leicester and City result, 2-1 for Leicester beating City, now City finds themselves 7 points out of the top of the table, which is held by Liverpool. Liverpool with a bit of a gap with everyone else.
6 points ahead of Spurs. City actually dropped a third with the results yesterday. People ask me, you know, for a couple things about this. I have a lot of Liverpool people in my life, so they're taking the piss out of me on this certain thing. And what I'll say to them is, if they continue to play at the level that they're playing at right now, what the hell am I supposed to say about it? They're undefeated. They never lose points. So it's, even though City has dropped a couple games in a row right now, there's nothing really wrong with how they're playing. Or Spurs, for that matter. They're all playing brilliantly right now. Maybe not specifically right now as it relates to City, but overall in the first half of the season. But Liverpool is just playing out of their head. They don't lose. They score for fun. They're defending very well. They have been the best team in the first half of the season. There is no doubt about that. And if they continue that, and they're deserving champions, and you really just have to tip your hat. That's what I will say. You know, in terms of what's wrong with City right now, have lost famously more games in the last 2 weeks than they've lost all last year.
I don't think there's anything wrong. Just before you go into it, just for me from the outside, there is something to say about other teams really playing well against them. Like that goal from Leicester from out of the box, no one could have stopped that shot in the planet. It was like a perfect shot. There's only so much sometimes you can do. Sometimes your opponent, the other team on the field, is playing well too. And Leicester yesterday played well.
Yeah, I'm going to steal Carl Robbins there. Fine line. Both losses were, you know, they did not play well in terms of finishing. City did. But so that's their part of this role. But look at those games objectively. City lost to a wonder strike to Crystal Palace. It was an amazing goal from outside the box on a half volley. which again is they're going to hit it perfectly one every 50 times they try it, and no one on the planet is stopping it if they hit it perfectly, and they hit it perfectly. So that's that. The bad luck there in terms of bad luck in the city. Good luck for Palace, whatever. Nice strike outside the box, but it's not. It wouldn't have been an expected goal, right? Like that's what I'm saying. And the same thing with the goal that wins for Leicester. So that's really it's fine lines, and those are 6 points that they just dropped right there, and suddenly the title race is in question. I think that if you look at the quality of City and you look at the fact that they're missing Fernandinho and David Silva, which are two massive pieces to the midfield right now, once they get healthy again, there's no reason to think they can't run off a similar run that Liverpool's been on this half. And what it comes down to is whether Liverpool can sustain. You know, I don't want to put all the pressure on them, and I won't take the easy slip joke here, but really it's up to them. If they continue to play the way they are, they will win the title. If they, you know, the great thing about this is January 3rd, City and Liverpool play, and Liverpool will look at that as a chance to put them 10 points down. And at that point, even the most optimistic City fan would have to say that it is unlikely that they could overturn that at that point, and they would probably just entirely focus on the Champions League and the FA Cup. I mean, they're already in the League Cup semifinals, so it's not that they can't have a successful season, right? So there's lots for them to still play for. But if
they win,
conversely, if City wins that, it's 4 points.
Exactly.
And then yeah.
And
you really just need...
Oh, go ahead.
I just think they really just need one draw and one loss from Liverpool, and then you can still control your destiny from that point. Go ahead, Kevin.
So on top of Liverpool playing really well, Spurs have been playing really well lately too. Their 5-1 destruction of Bournemouth over Boxing Day was quite impressive. Harry Kane off his bum, able to do nice passing. Who knew? Well, you know, the way Spurs is playing too, it actually brings a third team into the mix where, you know, Spurs playing well, Spurs still needs to travel to City and to Liverpool, which will be massive games, but it actually brings some suspense in to the Premiership title conversation. Chelsea is going to probably finish fourth. They have a little bit of daylight behind them, but there's a bit of a gap in front of them. So for Chelsea, getting the result in Watford yesterday was needed, but they've already dropped the games that they shouldn't have dropped, and now they're going to play fourth fiddle in this one. But still, a successful first season for Sarri, going to the Champions League spot and trying to better the roster for next year. Eden Hazard now is the 10th most goal scored for a Chelsea player with his performance against Watford yesterday, 2 goals. But it is a fascinating end of the season, well, half of the season we're going to have because of it's not just Liverpool, it's not just City, but there's Spurs there too. Even though we've seen Spurs, I've seen this movie over the last few years, and it always finishes second. It's a type of second movie. But there's them, there's Arsenal, who will want to come back into the conversation of a top four team. So it's going to be a fascinating end of the season with those five teams battling for those four spots.
No, precisely. And we shouldn't ignore Spurs in this conversation. It's just, it's hard to see them playing perfect at the rest of the season. The reason people talk about City here is because they're the only team you look at and think, well, they could actually run 12 in a row off or something like that because of the talent that's there. But they're going to have to get their... What I'll say about them, I watch them every game, obviously. And they have not been great since the 1st of December. They have struggled defensively in particular, and a lot of that has to do with Fernandinho being out. So you lose that clog in the midfield, and that number 6 is where they won their Achilles heel. You know, it's famously, and this is a great analogy for Achilles heel here, because this is right down the whole parable, right? So that's exactly what we're talking about. That they're a monster that can't be beat down except for one weakness, and that is that they don't have depth at that position. They had to put John Stones there in this Crystal Palace game, right? They just don't have depth, and I think that they'll address that in January. They have to at this point, and they have the money to. So, but in the meantime, they have to survive it. In the meantime, they have to get through this Liverpool clash, which became a would really like to win to an absolute must win overnight, and should be a hell of a clash because of that, because, you know, City hasn't had to play desperate in a while outside of the Champions League. And should make for an entertaining contest. They can't, like the last time the two of them played, it was kind of dull. They went nil-nil because both sides didn't want to give any points up to the other. This time, City needs to get the points. They need all three, and they need to take the three off Liverpool, and they need to sort of plant that seed into Liverpool's head that you're still Liverpool, guys. You know, you're the team that dropped the title race the other day. They
you
need
still
to plant
slip.
That seed.
You're just the same team as the Steven Gerrard slip, and we actually saw memes already with that famous slip. And instead of seeing Gerrard, they swoop his face for Virgil van Dijk. So we'll see. It could be an interesting end of the season for Liverpool.
Sure. All right, fair enough.
All right. As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme. Tomorrow on our Twitter feed at Soccer Today SBN, we have a big show tomorrow. The manager of the Afghanistan women's national team, Hayley Carter, will be on the show to talk about her role, talk about her path to becoming Afghanistan's women's national team, the challenges involved with being the manager of the Afghanistan women's national team, and it'll be a fascinating discussion about the world of football with the soccer perspective, as always. Until next time, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larame. We wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.